the Giants find themselves in the midst of a 5-game winning streak. That includes a 3-game sweep over the Atlanta Braves at home. And now they're 10 games over 500. Are the Giants back?
People keep asking if I'm back, and I haven't really had an answer. But now, yeah, I'm thinking I'm back.
I'm thinking they're back. We're going to talk about this 3-game sweep over the Braves, this 5-game winning streak the Giants have found themselves on, and preview the upcoming series against the Colorado Rockies. I am your host, Darius Slott, and this is Second and King.
Welcome to Second and King.
It's a deep!
A shot deep right field by Crawford. Adios, pelota!
And now, here's your host, Darius Long.
Yeah!
Welcome back to another edition of Second and King. As I said at the top, the Giants are riding a 5-game winning streak. Just coming off this 3-game sweep here in San Francisco over the Atlanta Braves. Yeah, the Giants, you know, went on a run here, a run that they kind of needed to go on. They've been kind of fumbling and tripping over themselves in recent games. And it was nice to have a stretch of clean, you know, baseball from this team because they hadn't had many games like that prior to this 5-game stretch. And it's got them right back. I shouldn't say it has them right back in it. They weren't exactly out of it, even with as bad as they had been playing, they still managed to find themselves within striking distance of the National League West and firmly in the National League wild card standings. It is kind of funny that even in the midst of this stretch, you know, they, you know, brought themselves back to 10 games over 500. They're 38-28. They're somehow still just in third place of the NL West. They right up there. I think the Padres are still just slightly ahead of them in second. And then they're only a game out of first place behind the Dodgers. And they just lost 2-3 to the St. Louis Cardinals. So the Giants are playing really good baseball at a really good time. And they got this series in Colorado against the Rockies coming up. And then after that, for the first time this season, they're going to see the Dodgers in Dodger Stadium. So it's kind of good to get it going and be playing good baseball at a time where you know that that series is on the horizon. But we still got Colorado to deal with first. You know, we have to focus on them before we even think about getting to the Smurfs down south. So, but yeah, we're going to talk about this Braves series. And if you were hoping for... You know, I talked about the last episode about the Giants offense getting it clicking again and potentially going on a run. If you were looking for that, you were not going to get it because the Giants still, the offense, you know, it's still, they score enough and the pitching does the rest. The starting pitching has been stellar. It was absolutely stellar, especially in this series, and the bullpen has been great all year, and they continue to take care of business like they have been doing, and it was enough. It was enough for the Giants to win, and the Giants won all three of these games by one run. All of them were one-run victories. There was no cushion. There was no adding runs, none of that. The Giants' offense is still kind of looking... to really break out again like it kind of had been doing earlier in the season. They had some games where they had more comfortable leads. This is not the case. But I would say, and I would argue, that while that isn't always going to be the most sustainable way to win games, sometimes you would like to have a stress-free game where you're up 2-3, maybe even more runs, and you don't always have to bring the closer out, or, you know, you have to use your best weapons out of the bullpen. And, you know, when those games get you know, later into the late innings, you know, it gets a little tighter, you know, guys on defense, pitching, all that, you know, it's torture, something that we as Giants fans are very accustomed to. But in the long run, I think it could serve the Giants very well, because if you are constantly in these close, tight, one-run ball games, and you know very well, given what you've been through this season, you have a very good chance to come out victorious every single time. And I think it's just building that confidence and that belief that, you know, if this game is close, if it's tied, if we're up a run, down a run, or if it's tied, the Giants feel pretty good about their chances to leave with a W. So in that regard, I think it's good to have these close one-run wins under their belt. At the same time, I'm begging y'all to please score some more runs so I don't always have to stress, you know, when it's the sixth, seventh, or eighth, or ninth inning. And I was also stressing on Saturday because I happened to be at Oracle Park for the second game in this series. We'll talk about that in a bit, but we'll start with the first game, just a brief overview of what happened. Giants won this one 5-4. They ended up winning this game in the bottom of the 10th, where they scored their Manfred man to walk it off against the Braves, but not in the conventional way. No, Tyler Fitzgerald, who was the ghost runner who started the inning on second base, ended up getting over to third with two outs, and then with Wilmer Flores at the plate, they just, I forget who was pitching. Tyler Johnson. Pierce Johnson, he was the one pitching, just spiked one of his curveballs right in the dirt. Sean Murphy couldn't handle it, and that allowed Tyler Fitzgerald to just jog on home and slide in with the winning run. So not the most conventional Giants win. At one point, they were up in this game. I believe they were up 4-2 at one point. You know, they got out to an early lead, something they don't do very often. They struck first with three runs in the bottom of the first. Didn't score very much after that. They didn't play another run till the sixth. Braves ended up tying it up with a two-run Matt Olson homer. And then they wouldn't score again until that bottom of the 10th, which they walked off to win. So another quiet night for the Giants offense. 2-for-9 with runners in scoring position with five left on. So again, just not the greatest offensive showing in that, but they hung around. Their pitching did the job. They actually played pretty sloppy in this first game too. A lot of, I believe there were two pickoffs that the Giants suffered. Jung-Hoo Lee was picked off by Craig Kimbrell, and then Tyler Fitzgerald was picked off by Pierce Johnson. Was it Pierce Johnson? He was picked off by somebody. I can't exactly remember when. Yeah, he did. Pierce Johnson in his second inning of work. He pitched the 10th as well. Yeah, so yeah, he picked Fitz off. I believe that's how that inning ended. Yeah, they to end the bottom of the ninth, he picked him off. Sorry, I was looking at my notes here and trying to see what I had. But yeah, they were pretty sloppy in this, both on the base pass, a little bit sloppy on the defensive front too. They committed an error by Jung-Hoo Lee on the throw, and there was just some overall sloppiness in this game. But the Giants were able to prevail and win that first game. Game two, like I said, I was at the yard for this one. Not a lot going on offensively for the Giants on this one either. Just five total hits. But Logan Webb, he was dealing in this one. He was awesome. He gave them everything that they could have asked for. The previous night, Hayden Birdsong had struggled. He only went 4 1/3. and just didn't have quite the same stuff. Started off very strong, but couldn't quite finish. Logan Webb did not have that problem. He came out firing. He struck out 10 Atlanta Braves, and I'm pretty sure like 9 of those were through the first 4 innings, if I remember correctly. He just kept racking up Ks, and Webby's not typically a strikeout pitcher. That's not his game. He'll be the first to tell you that. But when his, you know, he's got command of his sinker, his sweeper, you know, and he's incorporated that four-seamer that he likes to elevate at the top of the zone to get chases and maybe induce some weak contact, he's on one. And of course, you can't forget his changeup. And he had command of all his pitches. He only made one bad pitch that whole game. And that was the Michael Harris solo shot. The bomb he hit to like dead center. He hit it 423 feet to dead center. And that's no easy feat at that ballpark. But other than that, the only other run he gave up was on a weak ground out that played it the run. So it was 2-1 Giants for the longest time. Wilmer Flores hit his 11th home run of the year. And that was the only run for the Giants for quite a while. And in fact, the Giants offense was stymied for the longest time. And against Bryce Elder of the Braves, who coming into this game was not having a good season at all, but he had the game of his life pitching 8 innings, only allowing 3 hits, and he struck out 12 Giants. It was looking really bleak, and the atmosphere in the stadium reflected that, because we were kind of taken out of it by how the Giants offense had just struggled. And you know, but even with that, you know, Webby, you know, he did his thing. And then the bullpen came in and put up zeros. Eric Miller had a scoreless frame. Sean Jelly, back from AAA Sacramento, he had a scoreless frame as well. And so did Tyler Rogers. So they held the Braves, who, you know, even with their record, you still have to worry about this team, especially offensively. And for the last, few years now, and probably even longer, they've been the class of the National League, the Atlanta Braves have, and it's because of guys like Ronald Acuna Jr., Austin Riley, Matt Olson, you know, Michael Harris, you know. But, you know, for one reason or another, they have struggled in 2025, and you know, regardless of what the record says, that's still a team on the other side to be reckoned with. And that's why this series was so important for the Giants, and doubly important for the Braves, for them to get back on track and hopefully save their season. And they looked like they were on their way to doing that, but Matt Chapman had other ideas. Came to the bottom of the ninth. It was still Giants trailing by a run. With one out, Elliot Ramos singled. And then it came down to Matt Chapman, who prior to this, I believe he struck out, I can't remember. He struck out a few times in this game. He struck out twice, and I think both were looking. And I remember the gentleman I was sitting next to, we both were saying the same thing. Like, swing the bat, Chapman, on both of those strikeouts. And on a 1-1 pitch, a curveball that just caught enough plate, and you could just tell by looking at it that Chapman was sitting on it, and he swung on this one. He swung with all his might, hit a 98.9 mile per hour ball into the seats to walk it off. Just an incredible way to win. Got the entire stadium that was dormant, you know, for a majority of the game. Got everybody on their feet, got everybody excited. And that secured the series win for the Giants. And, you know, just added to the heartache of the Atlanta Braves. But the Giants, you know, are able to come through and, you know, prevail in that one. Only 5 total hits for the Giants in that game. And they only went 0-for-1 with runners in scoring position. So they didn't even force the issue in this game. So again, going back to those offensive struggles, it has been the starting pitching and, I mean, the pitching staff in general, not just the starters, that have really held up this Giants team and given them opportunity after opportunity to win games, and they just are able to pull it out. They're very resilient in that regard, and I'll give them that all day long. Like, while they may not score a ton of runs, they score just enough, and it got the job done. And at this point of the year, that's all you really want to do, especially if you want to continue to be in the playoff chase. So that brought us to Sunday. At the time of this recording, that would be yesterday's game. The Giants were looking for a sweep. They were looking to get greedy, and they would have to do so against Spencer Strider, who, while the numbers indicate he hasn't been all that great, you know, still a tough pitcher overall. And, you know, he does pretty, in the few games he's pitched against the Giants, he's done pretty well against them. So the Giants were going to have their hands full. But luckily for them, the guy they had on the mound in Landon Roop has been pitching magnificently, and he turned in yet another quality start. Struggled in points, but was able to grind through, win six innings, which is exactly what the Giants needed. Five hits only allowed, three earned runs allowed. He walked two and struck out two, but he held the line. And he, you know, normally the Braves, when they have big innings, you know, they have them in bunches. But the Giants pitching was able to hold them down and hold them to only three runs. And then they blanked them for the remainder of the game. And then it just kind of came down to, once again, can the Giants offense manufacture something? Can they get it going? Their first run was scored on a Mike Yastrzemski sack fly. So that at the time tied the game. Braves went back ahead 3-1. And then a guy who's been wearing it recently in Mike Yastrzemski, he has gone, he's had a long hitless streak, a drought of like not driving in a run prior to that sack fly. He doubles down the right field line and it just barely stays fair, rolls all the way to the wall, ties the game. And then the Giants get a little bit of luck on their side when Fitzy hits a ball to the right side and Ozzie Albies boots it. You know, it kicks off his glove and then he kicks it inadvertently with his foot and it just goes out in the right field, and that allows Yaz to score from second. And that was it. That was all the Giants needed, because from there, the bullpen did what it does. And just strike and just shuts down the Braves offense. They only had one hit for the remaining three innings, and that came in the ninth. And yeah, they shut him down. Randy Rodriguez with another scoreless frame. Hopefully Ryan Walker continues to pitch more outings like he did here. He had a scoreless frame as well, and Camilo comes in and secures his ninth save of the season to win. And the Giants offense again, 1-for-6. They again didn't force the issue. Not only did they not force the issue and, you know, try to score runs and put the pressure on the Braves pitching and defense, they only had three hits. And I remember saying on Twitter that I know the Braves got to be sick to their stomachs. Not only did they get swept, not only did all the losses come with just one run, but they lost, and they lost this game, and they held the Giants to only three hits in the final game, and they somehow still lost this game. So I know they gotta be feeling some type of way leaving San Francisco. They probably couldn't wait to get out of here, to be honest. They were probably sick of being here after, you know, what they had experienced. But the Giants, while the offense still continues to struggle, still scuffling, they managed to pull it out. They pull out the sweep against the Braves. They now are winners of 5 in a row, 10 games over 500. And now they can look towards Colorado. They have an off day today, and hopefully they can keep this momentum going as they get closer and closer to that Dodgers series, the first of the year. And, you know, you can't even look past the Rockies. I know they're bad, and they've had a bad time so far this season. They're the worst team in baseball. But historically, if you've been a Giants fan for a long time, you know Coors Field has been a house of horrors for the Giants. You know, they've had a number of games throughout their history where they would get big leads, they would get out to big leads, and then slowly but surely the Rockies would start chipping away little by little, and then very soon, like, their big lead is down to like one run, or it's tied, or they find themselves trailing. So they have to, you know, continue to play with the same level of intensity and the same level of just sharpness that they have been, you know, and just ensure that they can win this series. And I think they very well could, you know, sweep the Rockies. I felt this way the first time they played them when the Rockies came to San Francisco, and I feel the same way this time around. And then another good thing about this series, you know, coming up, is that, one, it's in Denver, and I think that's big because there are some guys on this Giants team that are looking to break out with the bat, and one of them is Willy Adames. Like, he's the one that I'm hoping this series can do him some wonders. You know, you have the Coors effect, you know, the ball travels there. It's a good place to get hits, great place to hit. It's a nightmare if you're a pitcher. That's where I'm thinking if, I'm not sure how well the pitching will do at higher altitude, but we will see. But I would look for the offense to hopefully break out, and I'm hoping it can help those who need it, one of them being Willy Adames, to hopefully, you know, kickstart their offense, because it's been a while and we still have yet to see any kind of actual consistent production from Willy at the plate. You know, he's been a good vibes guy, you know, he's been given a lot of good positive energy in the clubhouse, and that won't go unnoticed, and that's very much appreciated. But when you are being paid roughly around $20 million annually, and you've signed the biggest deal in Giants franchise history at 7 years, $182 million, you weren't brought in to be a vibes guy. You weren't brought in to be a de facto cheerleader or mascot. You know, you're the shortstop of the Giants, and you are filling the shoes of, I'd argue, probably the best shortstop in Giants franchise history, in Brandon Crawford. And, you know, we were spoiled by Craw. Craw made every play. He had, you know, he wasn't always the best with the bat, but he would have some time or some years where he would have put up big offensive numbers. And I think right now Willy is just trying to do too much, and he feels like he needs to fill those Brandon Crawford size shoes right away. And it'd be nice if he kind of just relax, take a deep breath, and not have to feel like it's all on his shoulders, because you can just watch his at-bats and his approach that this is a guy who is seriously pressing. He is chasing sliders off the plate. He's in between on his timing. He's popping balls straight up in the air. It feels like, to the point where I can't even remember the last time Willy hit a line drive. You know, like, so let's start there. Let's kind of get in rhythm here. So hopefully for him, and he's not the only one. Patrick Bailey, he hasn't looked good all year with the bat. Hopefully they can get him going as well. Jung-Hoo Lee's cooled off considerably. So, and I talked about this last time in the episode, it would be so much easier if the Giants could just get guys hot at roughly around the same time, because it feels like somebody gets hot and then everybody else goes cold. Like, it's never been like two or more guys hot at the same time. If they can get that, then things would be a lot better. We probably won't stress as much, probably won't have as many one-run games as we've had lately. But, you know, that's wishful thinking. You know, we'll see what happens. You know, anything can happen when she gets to Colorado. The Giants hopefully can take care of business there first and just continue that momentum going into that Dodgers series, because momentum is a good thing to have, you know, especially when you're about to play the class of the National League in the Dodgers, you know. But they've looked vulnerable themselves this year. A lot of IL stints for their pitchers and everything. But, you know, again, kind of like how I felt about the Braves, regardless of the stretch that they're in or whatever their record says, can never take that stuff for granted. And you still got to play good baseball. You know, this is the major leagues at the end of the day. But that's going to do it for this edition of Second and King. I'll probably try to get to you guys probably after the Colorado series, before this Dodgers series, and, you know, just kind of get my thoughts on that and hype up that Dodgers series before they play it. First time, we're in June and we still haven't played the Dodgers. We played the Padres, we played the Rockies, and we played the Diamondbacks, but we're just coming up on our first head-to-head matchup with the Los Angeles Dodgers, so it's the new scheduling format. I can't explain it. I don't personally like how spaced out divisional games are. Also don't like how we don't play as many divisional games, but hey, this is the way it is. But that's gonna do it for me, guys. Hopefully you like this episode. Like and subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. Make sure you like this video, like this episode. For my people on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, make sure you leave a rating and review. Helps the channel out a lot, and I greatly appreciate it. I also dropped something today. It's my first prospect profile episode. I talked about Giants prospect Dakota Jordan, one of my favorites that I've been keeping an eye on since he was drafted last year, and talked about him for a little bit. I'm going to try to do a lot more prospect profiles in the coming weeks. Just talking about Giants prospects, because there's a lot of fun ones and ones that I'm looking forward to seeing one day in the big leagues. But thank you once again for listening to this edition of Second and King. I am your host, Darius Lott, and as always, go Giants.